Good morning. It's good to be with you today, and we're especially glad to have those of you that are visiting with us. We're glad that you came our way. We have been doing a series of lessons from Romans chapter 12, and we're going to continue in that series today, talking about love being without hypocrisy. In Romans chapter 12 and verse 9, Paul says, "Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil, cling to what is good." As we've noted in previous lessons, the Christian is instructed here in Romans chapter 12 to present their body as a holy and living sacrifice. And also those who have gifts that the Lord has given him, as we talked about the last couple of weeks, you know, that's evidenced in a lifestyle that you live. You know, the things that you do in presenting your body as a living sacrifice are going to show up in the way that you live, in the way that you behave. And so you're going to be different from the world around you. You're going to be transformed, and your life, you know, should reflect that you are led by something different. You're not led by the world, but you're led by the Spirit. So in Romans chapter 12, really, what you're getting here in this section is a concise list of or short admonitions that could be described as a synopsis of holy living or spiritual living here in verse 9. Let love be genuine or without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal. Be fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own sight. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, as far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. And it goes on through the rest of the chapter. It's boom, boom, boom. It's concise statements. And if you go, you know, through verses 9 through 21 of Romans chapter 12, you really got a series that you could do for the rest of the year, basically, there with each one of those subjects. But what we are focusing on today is this phrase, love without hypocrisy. And it certainly helps us to understand that Paul's list here is not something that's exhaustive, but it is, yeah, it's pretty comprehensive. But, you know, Paul, speaking to this church in Rome, he's given them a list of things that he thinks they should work on. And certainly the list that would be given to us would be very similar, because these are all things that we need to do as well. If, you know, this is a list of things and directives that will help us to be more spiritually minded. And this is a great list to do that. So this is what the spiritual person does is love without hypocrisy. Let love be without hypocrisy. And so it's important for us to learn that. For this first part of it, let love. We really need to understand what love is. And that's really a lesson in and of itself. You know, Paul talks about letting love. Well, it's important to understand what that is. In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, that's really the text that a lot of people go to when they talk about love and how love is defined. And when you look in 1 Corinthians, as we've mentioned before, the instruction that's there really has a lot to do with the spiritual gifts that they have and the behavior that they are to be doing as they practice those spiritual gifts. And what's interesting is when we look at spiritual gifts, I know that what a fascinating time in which to live when those things were going on. And when the word was being revealed and the word was being confirmed by the signs and wonders that people could do, and in particular with these spiritual gifts. So we think about that's not going on today and how impressive that must have been to have lived at that time and see those things and how impressed people must have been. But Paul says that's really not the focus. That's what he tells the Corinthian brethren is as impressive as these things are, this is really not what you need to focus on. In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 1 through 3, he says, "Though I speak with the tongue of men and angels and have not love, I have become a sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned but have not love, it profits me nothing." And so you see here the focus that Paul is putting on the spiritual gifts. And the point is he's not putting the focus on the spiritual gifts. He's putting the emphasis on love. If I don't have love, then all these things mean nothing. And to the same church in Corinth in chapter 16, verse 14, he said, "Let all things that you do be done with love." So when we define love, how is it that we define it? Many people, including Christians, seem to think that love is nice feelings and it's warm affection or it's some kind of desire. And it's almost universally interpreted as being an emotion that you can't control. And, you know, we speak about falling in love or love at first sight or falling out of love. And when people say, "I love you," a lot of times what they mean is, "I love me and I want you." And that of course, is really, you know, the worst definition of love. That's selfishness. And it's the opposite of what the Bible defines as love. And you've probably heard, you know, many lessons on how love is defined in the Bible, and that there are four Greek words that are translated love. And you're about to hear another one right here. But it won't be the whole lesson. But we have these four words. Eros is the word that is not found in the Scripture, not emphasized in the Scripture. And that word is a fleshly or a sensual lust, sexual lust. And that is not one that is used here in Romans chapter 12. That kind of love is not described here at all. So we'll just move on from that. But the next type of love, which we do see here in Romans chapter 12, is the word storge, which is a love of kindred or a love of parents and children. It's a familial love. It's a family love. In Romans chapter 12 and verse 10, where we're told to be kindly affectionate, that's the word that's used here. And in 2 Timothy chapter 3, when Paul tells Timothy that there are some people that don't have the proper love in their family, that they are without natural affection. And, you know, when families don't love each other, that's not natural. Usually, you know, if somebody is going to love you, it's going to be your mom. If somebody's going to love you, it's going to be your father. But sometimes that doesn't happen, and that's what would be described not as natural. It's not natural for a family to not love their family. And so this word storge is talking about this kind of love, this familial love. The other word that is interpreted as love in the Scriptures is philia, or phileo, and it is a warm and tender affection for those that are in the same condition as you. And you may recognize the root word philia is like Philadelphia, and Philadelphia is described as the city of brotherly love. That's what the word Philadelphia means. And so that is what this word means. And in Romans chapter 12 and verse 10, where this is used, "Rejoice in hope, be patient in tribulation, be constant in prayer." Verse 10, "Love one another with brotherly affection." That's the word that is used here. This brotherly love is the word philia. And finally, the word agape. And that word is also used here in chapter 12 and verse 9. "Let love be genuine." Let agape be genuine. This is the love that goes beyond emotion. It goes beyond affection. It goes beyond family. And certainly it goes way beyond, you know, the sensual type of love. It's the type of love that's described in John chapter 3, that Jesus had that kind of love for us, that God had that kind of love for us when he sent his son to die for us, that God so loved the world, God so agaped the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. God has that love that goes beyond emotion or affection. It is an act of goodwill apart from anything else. And it's really the highest degree, highest definition of love that is possible. And certainly that's defined in God's love for us. It's not out of a sense of obligation. It's not out of a sense of affection. And certainly in our case, in relation to God, it's an undeserved act of will on our part that God willed to love us and to benefit us in that way. So agape is strong. It's not based on affection. It's not based on, well, you know, I love you. Do you love me? Yes or no, circle one. You know, that I'm going to love you because you love me. But it's really an active choice that we can sometimes love what is unlovable. Vine's dictionary of biblical words says that God's love for us, even as sinners, is an exercise of the divine will in a deliberate choice made without assignable cause save that which lies in the nature of God Himself. So what he's saying is that God has made a deliberate choice that makes it possible for God to love the unlovable. And it's what we can choose to do. We can choose to love what is unlovable. It's not something that's affection oriented. It's what makes it possible for somebody to love their enemy. That's a hard thing to do. So what's the opposite of agape love? You might think, well, you know, the opposite of love is hate, but it's really selfishness. Opposite of agape love is selfishness. In John chapter 13, which was read for us this morning at the Last Supper, Jesus took off his outer garments. He began to wash the disciples' feet. And we all understand this was an act of humility. And it was also an act that showed his love for them. And contrary to whatever it was Jesus' frame of mind at this time, which certainly must have been heavy because he knew what was about to happen. He knew that he was about to be betrayed. He's not thinking about himself. He's thinking about his disciples. You know, what are the disciples thinking about? Well, we could tell that the disciples are constantly thinking about themselves. They're thinking about selfishness. And the reason that Jesus is showing this example is because he wants them not to think that way anymore. Certainly, they are going to be entering into a period of time when they're going to need to get over that. He doesn't want them to behave in this way. You know, this is right after Jesus had chastised them for thinking about who's the greatest in the kingdom. You know, they're arguing about who's going to be the greatest. And that's not what they needed to be thinking about. So he shows them in this act that love is not, you know, just some undefined emotion, but it's really about a selfless, humble service to meet someone else's needs, no matter how lowly that service may seem or how undeserving it may be or may seem to serve that person. And so very significant that Jesus did that. And, you know, a couple of times in that instance, when they were having the conversation at the Passover meal, Jesus kept calling on them to do as I do. I want you to do as I have done. And part of that was that they needed to serve one another in humility. They need to serve one another. John chapter 13, verse 14. If then your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Most assuredly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who is sent greater than him who sent him. And so Jesus is saying that I'm the master, but you really need to learn from my example, because the master has done something that's an act of service, an act of humility. And so Jesus told them they needed to do what he did. Of course, the question comes up from time to time, well, you know, are we commanded to wash each other's feet? That's kind of missing the point. The point here is that this was an act of humility. And whatever today would be an act of humility on our part to serve someone else, that is exactly what we should do. And in this day, this was an act of humility. This was an act of a servant. This is not something that the disciples thought Jesus should be doing. And Peter argued that point. And Jesus said, you don't let me do this. You're not part of me. You're not part of the kingdom. You need to let me do this. And it's a lesson for Peter. And so in John chapter 13, verses 34 and 35, again, he calls them to love one another. A new commandment I give you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. And so it's well defined here, because Jesus tells them to love one another just as he has loved them. And so there's no ambiguity on that as far as what level of love that is. You know, sure, they can say that they love one another, but when Jesus says you need to love each other as I have loved you, that puts a much higher goal on that. And so, you know, serving is an activity of love. And love always manifests itself in action, or it should. And it should never be without a willingness to serve. It should never be that we don't want to act on someone else's behalf. And, you know, John makes it clear that we can't create love by simply saying, I love you. And you know, do you think that would work in your marriage? You know, just by saying, I love you, but the way that you act does not show that. People think those are the three magic words in your marriage, is just to say, I love you, I love you, I love you. And that's not right. The three magic words are, you know, let's eat out. You know, but I love you has to, you know, that may be a way of manifesting that love, is to give your wife a break and go out to eat. But 1 John chapter 3, verses 16 through 19 says, by this we know love, because he has laid down his life for us, and we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, let us not love in word or tongue, but in deed and in truth. And by this we know that we are of the truth and shall assure our hearts before him. So the contrast here is not in words that are said, but it's in deeds that are done. And when you see something that needs to be done, you do those things. In the context here of talking about love, it is also told to us that we need to love our enemies. And that's where it gets really difficult. Matthew chapter 5, verse 43, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. That's a very tall order, because if someone hates us, if someone acts out in the spirit of hate or does something to us that's undesired, you know, there's a sense of vindictiveness, there's a sense of justice, there's a sense of wanting to get even. And Jesus says that's not what you're supposed to do. Everybody can love those who love them. In fact, I made a reference just a minute ago to, I love you, do you love me, yes or no, circle one. You know, those are the kind of notes that got passed around when I was in school. And today people text those things, I guess. But back in the old days, people actually had to write notes to one another. And so you get that note from that girl. It says, you know, I really like you. Do you like me? Well, I never really thought about you before. But now that you have expressed that you like me, I'm a lot more interested in you. Isn't that the way that usually happens? You know, that I had no idea who you were. I didn't even know that you existed on this planet, but you just gave me a note. And so now I love you because you're interested in me. And that's kind of, you know, a little bit egotistical, I guess, or selfish. But sometimes it may make you recognize someone else. So what I'm saying, it's easy to like somebody that likes you. And if I find out somebody has a high regard for me, they become my best friend. But if they don't really think highly of me, all of a sudden my whole demeanor changes toward that individual. Jesus said that's not the way that you need to behave. Pray for those who spitefully use you. Bless those who curse you. That's hard. But that's what love demands. John chapter 14, verse 15, if you love me, keep my commandments. Well, that's one of the commandments that we were just told to do. And love demands that I act in obedience to God and exhibit my love through the things that I do. So, you know, how important is love? If you go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 13, it's very clear that what Paul is saying, that without love, all these other things that seem real important don't really matter. And he's addressing that love is the central issue, and it should be the central motivation for everything that you do. And what he basically says in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 is that the loveless person is of no value, because he says, without love, I'm nothing. So the person that doesn't have love is nothing. And he also says the person that doesn't have love is like a clanging brass. And what he's saying is just a bunch of noise that you say, I love you, but you don't do anything about it. It's just noise. It doesn't mean anything. And he also says he receives nothing of value, because he says it profits me nothing. So I'm nothing. I'm a clanging brass. It profits me nothing. You receive nothing of value. So that's how important it is. It just really leaves you with nothing if you don't have it. And also, Jesus says in Matthew chapter 22 that on love hang all of the law and the prophets. Matthew chapter 22, verse 36, Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? Jesus said to him, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. So if a person really learns to love in this way, you know, he's responding to these requirements in the law of God. He fulfills those. And it's very true that when you look at the law and the prophets, all of these things are central. I mean, they all point back to this. If you love God and you love your neighbor, then that kind of takes care of everything else. And it's so important for us to realize that. So love is absolutely important. Romans chapter 13, verse 8 says, Owe no one anything except to love one another. For he who loves another has fulfilled the law. For all the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet. And if there is any other commandment, are all summed up in this say, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. How true is that? When you think about these different things. You know, we see so much violence in the world today, and those that do these things don't have love for one another. They don't have love for mankind. It's a shame that several weeks ago, when we saw all the damage that was done in the panhandle of Florida, that people had to put signs outside their places of businesses that looters are going to be shot, because here is a tragedy. Here is something that everybody in that area is suffering, and there are those that will go take advantage of that. Is that showing love for the owners of that property? No, it's showing selfishness. I'm going to take advantage of somebody else's disaster. I'm going to take advantage of what somebody else is going through, because that's going to benefit me. I can get something for nothing because the windows of that store are blown out, and look at all that stuff in there. If I don't get it, somebody else will. That's all about selfishness. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. You shall not murder. All those things have to do with love for your brother, love for your fellow man, and ultimately your love for God. And if you have that love, you don't do those things. And that's why Jesus is correct when he says that love takes care of all these things. Every commandment has to do with either love for God or love for your neighbor or love for your brother. In 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 8, And above all things, have fervent love for one another, for love will cover a multitude of sins. 1 John chapter 4 verse 8, He who does not love does not know God, for God is love. 1 John chapter 4 verse 16, And we have known and believed the love that God has for us. God is love, and he who abides in love abides in God, and God in him. We're also told to learn to love is to be more like our Heavenly Father. It's to be more Christ-like. Ephesians chapter 3 verse 16, That he would grant you according to the riches of his glory to be strengthened with might through his Spirit in the inner man. That Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, and that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend with all the saints what is the width and length and depth and height, to know the love of Christ which passes knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. So to know love and to know the love that Christ has for us is going to, if we react to that properly, it's going to dwell in us, it's going to live in us, and it's going to make us more Christ-like, which is our desire. It's a very tall order, but we're to be imitators of God. Ephesians chapter 5 verse 1 says, "Be therefore imitators of God as dear children, and walk in love, as Christ also has loved us and given himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for sweet-smelling aroma." To walk in love, it describes, you know, a continuous obedience. That's what it means to walk. When we see it in Scriptures, to walk means that you're continuously doing something. And we are continually being obedient. It becomes a default way of our acting and our reacting. And that's how we can imitate, or should be imitating, Jesus Christ. Tonight we're going to look more in depth at this and do part two of this lesson about what it means to love without hypocrisy. Certainly we need to respond to the love that God has shown for us in being obedient to Him and being buried in baptism. And it shows that we appreciate the love that God showed for us and the sacrifice Christ made for us. If we can help you in any way be obedient to the gospel of Christ, we invite you to come while we stand together and sing.